Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on major pro wrestling and MMA promotions, the occasional history lesson, and interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap.
You know, when there's, sloppy wrestling, we find better things to talk about.
That's true, and I didn't know a lot of the, I can only take my prism from, commentary really on the Observer site. I haven't had a chance this week to seek much else out, but, my biggest problem with Raw, and Brian was not as, he was pretty down on it, but then as time went on, and the more you thought about the show, the worse it got, and the less you wanted to think about it. But the thing that got me all night was, I remember we were all sitting here talking a couple of years ago when the WWE started to theme out their pay-per-views, and we were like, I'm dumb of an idea to copy TNA, something's not working. It's like, geez, are they sending moles up to Stanford and doing this stuff? And now my biggest problem with Monday was it was all wink, wink, nod, nod, chuck, chuck, durr, from the beginning of the thing to the absolute end. It was, and everywhere in between, it was, wink, wink, Dolph, are you a cheerleader tonight? Are you this? Are you that? And then, the end of the show, it was, this is the cliche thing. Okay, I know what I'm watching. I got it. I know what I'm watching. I don't need a running commentary from you goofs. How about just, right, you do your thing? And that was my, more than anything else, and again, you could find something in Raw every week, to blow up. In fact, you can blow up most of it. But this week, that was the biggest thing for me, because it was like, they clawed a little bit back last week. It wasn't great or anything like that, but at least there was, some wrestling. And then, this week we're back to this, saw the SmackDown spoilers. And it, they are what they are. So it's like, again, it's not my money, but it's hilarious. They got this network. They're hyping the network on Monday, too. And that, I don't know. That's another thing entirely that just, in good times, it's a risky proposition. In times where people may want to, actually advertise, it's a hell of a proposition to have. And to do it now is hilarious, especially with the crap they showed Monday. Out those questionnaires for how long now, and that's the best you could come up with, name-wise. And then, those shows are based around people getting drunk and showing their ass and stuff like that. And I even if you script the whole thing and all that stuff, it will be funny to kind of see those guys out there. But you know what? There was a reason that Fuji Vice was only, 4 minutes on TNT. Right. I don't think I want to see 13 episodes of that.
Oh, absolutely not. I'm trying to find it here. Where is it? Oh, man, here we go. Here's a good story. Let's go with this. Let's just kind of lead with this. And of course it's stretching out into another sport, but the International Boxing Hall of Fame announces its new class of inductees. Thomas Hearns in that class. Did you get to see that list?
I did not yet. No, I did not.
Yeah, this will be the 23rd annual Hall of Fame event. It will be held in June in Kentucky.
About the fact he's not in the Observer Hall of Fame, I don't know how. They're called the After Mag. They were Stanley Weston Publishing, and obviously
yep.
Published The Ring for years. That's a killer class for, people our age, man, especially Thomas
yep.
Hearns. And the best part is they're going to start re-showing all those Thomas Hearns fights, leading up to that, which is great.
Sure. And speaking of Hall of Fame news, for what it's worth, I guess really it's kind of a Hall of Shame, but let's see, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame announced today. Guns N' Roses gets in on the first ballot. A Hall of Fame without Rush is like, it's kind of like a Wrestling Hall of Fame without the Andersons. But no jab intended there. But it's great that they're in. I can argue all day long the merits of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. This is a money move. This is. Let's get Axel and Slash on the stage together. That's what this is.
Oh, yeah, it may blow up in their face. I think the only time it's ever blown up in their face has been Creedence and Fogerty not going up there, you know, just refusing, you know, and they're showing them in the crowd as uncomfortable it was to watch with everybody else up on stage. You know, this would have been the year, too, for Rush, too, because it was Beastie Boys, which, again, I know this is the Pop Music Hall of Fame, you know, and it's there for tourist attractions and stuff.
Well, I don't even know if it's the Pop Music Hall of Fame, because if it was, Hall & Oates would be in there. They haven't even gotten on a ballot yet. I don't get it.
Yeah, some of those things on me, I know it was...
Fucking go, what the hell are these people thinking? And I base it on longevity and success and album sales. Kiss and Bon Jovi. Not even ever on a ballot. How are those two bands not on a ballot?
I don't... Yeah, how is that possible?
They're not even considered. Not even considered. But anyway... Screw those guys.
Aren't the Sex Pistols in?
No. Well, you know, I don't. It seems to me I don't know if they went through inducting them because I remember they said there was a letter sent from the Pistols camp that said we're not showing up. Thank you. So and that's the nice version. So
Donnie
Rotten
for life.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know if they actually did go through with it or not, but I know they were not going to attend, and there was talk that they were going in, but I don't know that they actually placed them in there. But you know what? They just didn't travel enough. You know, I don't see how they could possibly get in.
Yeah, it's Gene and Ole there is.
Oh,
man. Well, you know, they're all subjective things anyway. You know, they all, they are what they are because, you know, after a bunch of guys, you know, the burst, it's like, you know, everybody else that you have to debate is on the, you know, it's when it becomes the, you know, very good Hall of Fame or the very good fame.
Well, I wouldn't even call it the Hall of Very Good because there's still so many snubs in the in Cleveland there that it's just, I don't know. Screw those people. So anyway, Ring of Honor, the best thing going. Final Battle shaping up to be a great looking event. Got a gauntlet match that was just announced. Five team gauntlet match. What are they calling them? The CNC. Caprice Coleman and Cedric Alexander. The CNC. What are they calling them? That'll lose me right now.
I don't know their gimmick tag name. Is it? All I just saw was instantly those the CNC Music Factory, which is just
it's a play off that, and then of course the Young Bucks, the All Night Express, the Bravados, and Future Shock. That of course coming on the heels of what was an 80-minute match in Greensboro this past weekend.
Yeah, I guess some debate over that. I didn't see it, so you know I don't. I'm sure I'm gonna like it. I don't know. 80 minutes is a long time, and I know I watched a lot of hour, so it probably went like 75 or something like that, but it whizzed for the most part. It was still kind of long, you know, because you had to, you know, you settled in and everything. I guess you just didn't know when this one was going to end, but, I mean, it's kind of insane.
Hey, we got a caller from Florida. Let's see what this is. You're on the air with us.
Hey, Rick.
Who we got?
It's Jeff.
Oh, this would be Jeff Luce. How's it going, sir?
I'm doing all right. How you doing, Mike?
Not too bad, man. What's going on?
Not too much. Just getting my health back in order. I got out of the hospital a week ago. Was in the hospital for a month.
A month?
Yeah.
What happened?
I took a bad fall, and I was on blood thinners, and I got all bruised up, and had to go to the emergency room, and they ended up having to do an emergency blood transfusion. And if I would have just stayed at home, doctor said I wouldn't have made it.
Into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, right?
I love docking, but no. If anything, as far as I'm concerned, if Thin Lizzy's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it's not a real Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, so...
There you go, and that's the bad thing is you can go on about two, three, four hours a long list of people that not only aren't in but have never even sniffed the ballot.
Kiss sniffed the ballot one time. One time, Kiss got on the ballot and didn't get in. That's just a load of BS. But speaking of Hall of Fames, I've been pushing. I don't know if you've been reading Wrestling Classics in the WAN forum, the Wrestling
yep.
Observer forum. You know, I've been pushing for Joe LeDuc to get into the WAN Hall of Fame, and I can't get any support. Can't really get any support behind Joe. You know, Joe was a well-traveled guy. I put a lot of information in there. I don't know how much time he spent in Georgia.
You know, I vaguely remember him. I mostly actually remember him in, with Continental over there in the 80s after he'd left Georgia. I do vaguely remember actually seeing him. Of course, you know, going through research over the years. He had a run here. It was a pretty nice run, but it, you know, nothing of major proportions. But he was an entertaining guy.
The act in Memphis, and there's the famous picture of him. I can't remember if he's choking on Bruiser Brody on the ropes or something like that, but I think Scott Casey's the referee, and he's pulling him away, and it's, he's got this maniacal look, and he's biting the ropes. And you know, I know. Les would probably be the one to ask on that one. I would actually have to see, you know, how much money he, you know, he always moved around, but, you know, in Canada, I mean, he was in main events and in big things. I don't know why he doesn't get more support
when he was in Crockett.
You know, I do kind of remember that somewhat. Yeah.
But you know what? I don't know if that, even though it was that was a weird era. I remember watching them, and I don't remember. I knew Valiant was a little more than he was a couple years later on, but I mean, he was still. I wouldn't have. Was it really a main feud though?
Oh yeah, yeah. Because Richard Sullivan even backed that up on Wrestling Classics. He backed it up.
Okay.
He was a main eventer in JCP. Yes, he did. Yeah. So
was that around the time it was, you know, it was Valentine, and was Orndorff there? I'm trying to think, what was in 82?
He was in the House of Humperdinck. So it had to be 83 because, no, 82, he spent most of his time in Southeastern.
Okay.
Oh my God, his feud with Austin Idol and Jacques Rougeau, he actually, you know, was able to play both roles really well. You know, I just, something about him is people just, I guess they just dismiss him because they think he was nothing but a bloodletter. But, you know, if it was okay for Abdullah the Butcher and Bruiser Brody, why is it not okay for Joe LeDuc, you know?
That's always one of the – I was thinking that earlier on when you started talking about that there's always more credence given to Brody and to Abdullah. But, you know, and, you know, there's – they draw the line from Sheik and, like, you know, Sheik, the Bobo, Terry Funk, and then to that's about it. You know, for guys who were able to travel around, why would Joe LeDuc in that case be any different outside the fact, I guess he didn't have, I don't remember, I'd have to go back and see if he wrestled for like IWE or something in Japan, but it's like, is that the only thing that's separating him from those guys? I mean, obviously, maybe didn't make the dollars they did, but you look at, I mean, that's a lot of territories. I mean, again, in Canada, too, Montreal, he was in that feud. There was, you know, the Rougeaus and everything up in Montreal with the two promotions there. And then out in Stu Hart, I know he was there, too, and he headlined there. So that's a lot of promotions headlined.
Yeah, I counted them up as 8. Plus, he was a major player, you know, in the upper mid-card in L.A. and in Texas, too, doing some research. And I don't know where he worked at in Japan. I wasn't able to find out any information about, you know, where he worked at, you know, as far as the promotions in Japan go. But I'm sure he had to make at least a couple tours there.
And you know what? And people listening to this, too, and Rich, you know, you can probably back this up. I know Les would if he was here. I don't think I'd be lying in saying that there is a bias, obviously, because, you know, I'm worked upon when it comes to history. you know, by, I think by the general historian and by the average wrestling fan, I think they actually look down and turn away and don't give any credence or enough credence to Kentucky, Tennessee, Knoxville, you know, all the way down into the Gulf.
I think that's fair to say. I think there is, and you know, for what reasons, who knows, but, you know, I know a lot of people, I mean, at least some within the business have had issues in those areas with certain people in management roles. So, you know, what are you going to do there? But, you know, as far but it seems like those guys are just never on the ballot either.
Yeah. It just doesn't seem like the people that are making the decisions, you know, were ever around that area, you know.
Well, I'll say this, Jeff. One thing I can say is I've been a voter with the Observer Hall of Fame now for a few years, and I can honestly say when I say that about guys not being on the ballot, and Mike, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember seeing anybody that was heavily based there and never had a real run anywhere else. You know, that wasn't already like a major national star. I don't remember seeing anybody on the ballot.
By the time it got to me, those people were probably dropped off, because I'm sure, like, say Austin Idol, for example, or Jimmy
right.
Valiant, or, you know, somebody, Adrian Street, and those are just, you know, random 80s ones. But, you know, those guys on the ballot, I don't think I've ever seen them, but they were probably on there dropped off because not enough people voted for them.
Well, and, you know, one thing I can say, Jeff, though, for what you're doing, you know, trying to drum up the support on that forum, that got the Andersons back on the ballot. After they'd fallen off, and then they made a hell of a showing that first time around, and a lot of that came from people like Sullivan and you know, a few others, you know, going in and making the arguments and putting the, you know, documented fact out there that, you know, these guys, it wasn't just about the Carolinas and Georgia so much, and really what their value was, and, you know, defending their run in their long tenure in the Georgia and the Carolinas.
Yeah.
So, you know, by doing what you're doing, it can only help.
Yeah, even if he got in as a promoter, Ron Fuller definitely needs to be in the Hall of Fame, because I have yet to talk to a wrestler that ever worked in Southeastern that had a bad thing to say about him. I talked to Ken Lucas at least a few times a month, and he has nothing but good things to say about Ron Fuller. Always paid well, always looked out for him, made sure he was in good programs, you know, good feuds, and he looked out for him, and he always had a place to come home when he would leave. And, you know, I, as a promoter, you know, Ron Fuller definitely would have my vote.
Well, hey, Jeff, I'm gonna make a suggestion to you. I don't know if you call the guys on Thursday night on Peach State Pandemonium much, but you probably should give them a yell tomorrow night. They're going with a wide-open forum. They've got no topic in mind. They're just going to just go from the time they get started. So you might want to give them a shout tomorrow night and see what other kind of fuel you can get to keep that drive moving.
Sure. I call them quite often, too.
Okay.
Yeah,
because I know Bill Bowman and Joe Turner show up quite often over there, as does Dick Steinborn. So if those guys are listening in and they got something to add, I'm sure they'll do so.
All right. Well,
Jeff,
I'm going to sit back and enjoy the rest of the show.
Hall of Fame material, I don't know, but I will say this. He's got a point about guys from that area not really being, maybe just kind of being slighted a little bit.
Well, you know, it'd be interesting, you know, because Carl Cox hitting in, and Dave wrote a meaty, you know, bio with him.
Oh, that was awesome, too, wasn't it?
Last week. And you go, well, you know, and again, I'm not saying Ledoux didn't influence anybody, but you go, you look the direct line that you know of, you know, down to Dick Murdoch, down to Ted DiBiase, and you saw what they did. You saw how he was talked about and everything, and then you go, okay, well, you know, it's interesting. I don't know. And now would be a good time to crack whip. And Jeff's smart move is now's probably the time to crack whip on Joe, where, you know, people are trying to do more research on things and the research is available and stuff like that. But he's a guy, you know, if we don't get all the stories on him now as time moves on, you know, obviously it's not like people are beating down the door telling Joe Ledoux stories, but, you know, if we don't get them now, guys, and a lot of the characters that went through there, and because I don't think I've ever heard, you know, really do that yet. If he has, I've completely missed it. But, you know, outside of his book.
I was lucky enough to have about 2 hours with Lawler in a wings place, and he can go, you know, we had him on PSP back when I was over there. I think me and Masters were doing it at the time. He was on with us for about, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes one night. We got to get him out there. No, I've not seen that.
Do yourself a favor and watch that one. It's question and answer session. I think 10 questions with the Briscoes.
Right.
As the Briscoes, and it was fantastic. it's too bad that they're in the era that they are now, because they, as characters on their own, just by being themselves, you know, 20 years ago, would have been huge. But it's hard to put them in a WWE style setting and make them, you know, give them the shiny glossy package, and TNA wouldn't know what to do with them. So I wish they would be, you know, somehow make more money, but unfortunately, I guess fortunately for the wrestling fan, their creativity gets to go in Ring of Honor, and at least we get that. But they are just, again, yeah, just look up the most recent Briscoe brothers interview on YouTube, and it's great.
All right, we'll have to do that. Of course, let's see, UFC big press conference today. The second Fox broadcast is going to be, I guess, three matches. How's that sound to you in terms of what they got lined up?
I hate this card. I hate this card. Did you hear Observer Live on Sunday?
No, did not.
They made the decision to give Chael Sonnen, they announced him being on the next Fox show, against, Mark Munoz, who just defeated Lieben, and is a legitimate top contender at 185 pounds, had a great Jackson's camp, hell of a wrestler, all-American wrestler, tough guy, you know, but I don't want to see that fight, because you're risking Chael and Anderson Silva, and okay, if you want to put Chael on there, put him against Michael Bisping. Wait until the Michael Bisping fight that night is over with, because, I mean, Bisping isn't as highly ranked as Munoz, wouldn't deserve the shot as much, but you're doing this on Fox to build for a pay-per-view rematch, which is going to make tons and tons of money. If you are going to risk that, you need a nuclear option like a Michael Bisping, who you can at least bank on his mouth, if nothing else. You can bank on Quentin Rampage Jackson being his buddy. You can bank on all of these other things to try to get you some money on a pay-per-view with Anderson Silva, who, even though he is a pay-per-view draw now, he is one that fluctuates a lot. Nobody is going to pay for that, and you have to try to maximize it as much as you can, so I think that would be the only thing that makes sense. And then to put Rashad Evans and Phil Davis together to risk, I mean, you've already got John Jones and Machida in a fight that John Jones can lose this weekend. You got him and yet Evans and Davis facing each other, which is going to risk Jones and Evans, which he's been building and has been building for well over a year now. Again, Phil Davis, and I like Phil Davis, Mr. Wonderful, Phil Davis, the perfect armbar and a great amateur wrestler at Penn State, fantastic star on the rise and next generation athlete in the vein of the GSPs and John Joneses. But nobody cares about him yet. So you're risking Evans losing, and again, I don't think he will. It's a much safer bet for me. Then say Sonnen and Maya, I'd be shocked, you know, if Davis can pull this off. But you're risking it. And, you know, in that situation, honestly, the best thing that could happen is Phil Davis, you can look into the future and say Phil Davis beats Rashad Evans, then basically Machida's got to beat John Jones this Saturday night, because then you have the excuse to do the match anyway, even though they're both coming off losses, because it's a grudge match and you can sell it that way. And then
and turn around. And who is going to win Saturday?
To be honest, as of today, on Wednesday, I'm taking Machida. But let me, Bisping. They have Bisping, and I think, is it Stan? No, not Stan, Damian Maya. Again, now Maya is no joke as far as I think Bisping can beat him. But, I mean, Maya can most certainly beat Bisping. So you put Bisping on the card anyway. I don't know. They really took the piss out of the second card on Fox, which, again, I think is going to do well. Their storylines and all that sort of stuff, and I think it's going to do well overall. But I was just very, very surprised with the decisions that they made for it. It's very sporting. I'll give it that. It's very sporting as far as contenders fighting other contenders to get, you know, shots at titles. But it's a really, really risky proposition. And they're towing that line between sports and entertainment, trying to become an accepted sport when, you know, everything you're based off of is super carny. And it's a hell of a line to walk right now for them. So I don't envy them there. But these could be really risky decisions.
And, of course, GSP going to be out for nearly a year, setting up a fight for the interim welterweight title between Diaz and Condit.
I can't wait to see Condit and Diaz, actually. I love that fight. I'll pay for that fight. That fight will do, with a good, you know, co-main event with it, is going to do 500,000 buys. With that said, I mean, or at least 400,000. GSP being out, this is like how they started last year. I mean, it's just 6 to 9 with the one guaranteed draw that you have. This is more pressure, you know, from the cable operators and the UFC's point of view. On Brock Lesnar has got to beat Overeem and not get sick at any point, because those are the only two guaranteed draws. You know, you put BJ Penn in with somebody, he'll do 300,000. You put Anderson Silva in with somebody, he'll probably do about 300,000, depending on who he's fighting. And there's those guys, almost everybody else is in those ranges. You know, maybe Rashad Evans is a little bit more, but almost everybody's in those ranges. So the only guys who were million-buy fighters are George St. Pierre and Brock Lesnar. And now you're missing GSP for 9 months. This is not good. But, you know, and again, it's almost dancing with the devil. Do you want Nick Diaz to win? Because at least you can market him. At least he's got a big mouth. Even though he's insane, he may not show up to things. You can try to work a lot of that in your advantage. Condit wins. Great athlete. Will probably make a great sporting champion for the interim amount of time, but what do you do with him?
Oh, and I guess, let's see, also coming out this week, staying with the MMA thing, Strikeforce talking about the Grand Prix now expected to end in March. That's the longest
trying to starve
tournament
Josh Barnett out, I guess.
Good Lord, when did they start this thing, 1983? I mean, really.
Well, you know, hey, the thing was sold and all that stuff again, and the fact that they'll even bring up Strikeforce is good to me, because I like women's mixed martial arts, and it, look, it's there to smack around with Bellator, and it's there to give things that UFC doesn't want to promote under their banner, you know, like Josh Barnett, it gives them that. So, you know, I'm happy at least going to stick around. At least it looks that way if they can work it out with Showtime.
So Miss USA, twice the legal limit, stopped in Detroit, twice the legal limit. Cops say she immediately identified herself as Miss USA. She's definitely not going to get a second chance with WWE at this point.
No, see, that's not true.
Yeah?
Because, you know, she could come now a lot cheaper. And obviously, and hey, you know, look how many, they just don't bring it up. I mean, obviously, when they want to take a shot at people, Shane Helms, they took a shot at. There's been other guys, Alex Riley, they took a shot at or had shots taken at them after their DUIs. But, you know, plenty of guys get them, and they don't have to talk about it. And again, she.
From what I understand.
Ouch.
Yeah.
I did not hear that, although hopefully that doesn't put him at risk for being in the Legends house with the Iron Sheik.
There you go. Well, you know, hell, put Rima in the house with him. That'll be great. Did you see the goofy ring? I don't know what the hell you call her anymore. Kia Stevens, Karma, Awesome Kong, Amazing Kong. Did you see the ring? It's a
I saw all I saw was just a little sideways still shot of, like, her hand and, yeah, the wrestling ring. I mean, is that the wedding ring?
Yeah.
What is that?
It's an engagement ring.
Oh,
and,
my.
I don't know.
Hey, that's pro wrestling love. There's somebody who really loves what they do and loves their business probably too much.
Nothing says love like
that's bread. Something. I mean, we had a Mr. Bump birthday cake for Avery when he turned, two? We had things like that, and because that's what he loves. I don't know if you should be, giving wrestling ring engagements. I don't know. I don't know about that one. I mean, if my wife, did say, we got engagement rings and we got matching ones, and she brought in one of those, like, out of the backs of the magazines, like the Balfour Atlanta Falcons ring, like it had the gaudy logo and it basically looked like a crappy high school ring in 10-karat gold. Like one of
that's
those,
okay.
Like, here, honey, like, it's like, I like football, but, give me a break. I'm not wearing this crap. And now I want an annulment before we even get this thing going.
And the Falcons look like a crappy high school football team, at least lately.
I'm not talking about a team with no identity.
Trying to bait you to go there.
If they got their team with no identity, who's got to be happy that injuries in Chicago and Detroit having the identity of, straight out of Compton, NWA from 1988, having their mentality. I mean, at least they got that going for them, because that's the only way Atlanta and the Giants are going to get in the playoffs is because, Chicago's all banged up and Detroit's stupid.
I was going to ask you about Margarito Cotto. Thought?
I didn't pay for it. Saw it. Went over to somebody's house after the eighth round, so technically it was TKO 9. Good. I thought Cotto would win the fight. I thought he'd bust him up pretty good. But I was, happy to see it at least. And I mean, Margarito, the 24/7s and him having his hair in cornrows and doing everything to play the heel in this. I mean, it was great boxing promotion. They did a great job. I think they're claiming $600,000. I'd say probably that number is probably about $450,000 legit right now. If it's truly $600,000 what they're announcing, that's usually about how it would be. I think it's going to do well over $500,000 buys when it's all said and done. They should be proud of that number. I mean, realistically, who else is really doing that? So, Cotto with his Puerto Rican fan base, Margarito with his Mexican fan base, and the fact that HBO did a great job in building up the whole thing. I mean, it was great promotion, don't get me wrong, but the fact that it was, Cotto had to take this kind of fight to make his best money is a shame, and doing it against a guy who, frankly, could have killed him, and that's the worst part, that could have killed him, and to have to fight it in New York in Madison Square Garden, it makes you shake your head, and it's like, it's too bad that had to happen for Cotto to get his and for there to be a great boxing night. Oh, by the way, it wasn't a great boxing night. That same night, so the UFC's on Saturday night. That fight's on Saturday night. And then Mahrez and Abeko fought on Showtime Saturday night from the Honda Center in Anaheim, the pond. The building was set up for 5,000 cases of this. There was a De La Hoya-promoted fight where the rights fees, they paid $2 million to have the thing down at the soccer stadium. I think it's called the Staples. I figured in L.A. or outside L.A. And I think the gate was, again, $10,000 or something like that. I mean, it's, boxing guys try to hold on to something, and it's just what a foolish place to book. I mean, my heavens, I just don't understand that whatsoever.
What is next up of any real significance in the boxing world?
Well, this Saturday I'm debating over whether I'm going to go up. I kind of, probably blew it not getting the press credentials. Amir Khan and Lamont Peterson in D.C. Taking place this Saturday night on Showtime. Thing with that is Amir Khan's got one fight out there at 140 pounds against Timothy Bradley. And Amir Khan was, I want to say, the silver, I can't remember, silver gold medalist, can't remember what it was, British-based boxer, 90, oh, God, I can't remember the Olympics now, it's been so long, maybe the 2000 Olympics, Immediately came out of there, signed a massive deal with Reebok. I think maybe signed with Frank Warren Promotions, and he's one of those guys that, you know, huge hype right off the bat. Not his fault, but, you know, he was part of a machine. We saw it work for De La Hoya. It didn't work out so well for Khan because it's more of a bitter era, so people were hoping he would trip up along the way, criticizing everything. At this point in his career, he's with Freddie Roach in the Wild Card Gym, which obviously helps him immensely. And he's got a fight out there at 140 pounds against Timothy Bradley, who I don't think necessarily wants to fight him. And then, you know, he wins this fight here. You got the Bradley fight at 140, and he's also in the mix for maybe a Pacquiao shot, maybe a Mayweather shot if they don't fight each other. And a fight I'd like to see him take is actually against Juan Manuel Marquez. So it's yeah, and there's a lot of people. I think there's probably as many people in the U.S. that like him in the U.K. because he's such a polarizing figure over there. But this is going to be just, again, with having Freddie Roach on his side and being a marketable, good-looking guy, well-spoken, and a talented fighter who's beginning to, you know, kind of grow a beard and be able to take better punches and being able to mix it up in a more exciting style. He's a guy that, you know, could do good things for American boxing fans and for American boxing television. So if he wins this fight on Saturday, at least it's going to be something to watch for.
I think Top Rank ought to pick up Joe Capp and King Kong Mosca, and just let's see what they can do.
You got to give them this. I mean, that cane came around fast. I was stunned how fast that cane actually came around from Mosca. Now Capp hit him with the two-piece and the biscuit, and it's terrible. And this is gonna sound terrible. Absolutely terrible. But I'm going to do this later on in my life, I'm sure. So people will be making fun of me, so I'm fine with it. Sometimes when two old guys fight, you know, and they don't really land or anything like that, it's kind of funny. It is.
Well, I don't know if you read Mooneyham's our column this weekend in the Charleston Post-Courier. I'm going to read the first three paragraphs. It's real quick. It says, it wasn't exactly a fight for the ages, but it was certainly a fight for the aged. It says Angelo King Kong Mosca must have had a flashback to his wrestling days when the once rugged bruiser known as Big Nasty and former CFL rival Joe Capp went Ollie Frazier in front of startled onlookers at a gathering in Vancouver. On second thought, maybe Lennon Mathau would be closer. I'm sorry. That video was awesome.
You know, of course, I'm saying this, you know, but, you know, older guys, you know, Les is 71, 72, whatever Les is, and he can still probably swing pretty good if he wanted to.
He could still kick your ass and mine at the same time.
At the same time, yes.
Yeah.
So I think I'll retract my earlier statement and shut up.
Yeah. So let's see.
I tell you this, I don't know, after all of these years and after growing up watching him in Mid-Atlantic, I still think probably at this point I could take Angelo Mosca Jr. Oh, it's hurt my feelings. I'm sorry. No offense to Angelo Mosca Jr. That time, 83, 84, and I loved Gary Hart, and I loved a lot of the guys that wrestled in Mid-Atlantic. I really did. And you think now, Gary Hart was in, Ernie Ladd, and who else was the other? Dory Funk Jr. And
yeah,
one
Dory.
Had Virginia, one had North Carolina, one had South Carolina. And they were in flux. I mean, it wasn't exactly the early 70s where they switched over from the tag teams and Sandy Scott came in, but they were a company in flux. And Angelo Mosca Jr., with that white and black Mid-Atlantic title belt around his waist, just, I think he feuded with Ivan Koloff, and he feuded with some other guys. I mean, Gary Hart, and it's just like, I could never get into Angelo Mosca. I don't want to say he looked uncomfortable, but he wasn't. It just wasn't. It was like watching Barry Windham as Blackjack Mulligan Jr. And then, you know, to find there was a lot more going on in Barry's life. I think he got into a car wreck and was bad into drugs and some other things like that when he was there alongside Jake Roberts. But you see him in the Blackjack gear, you know, with it, and it just didn't look right. And Mosca with that Mid-Atlantic title always just drove me bonkers until Black Bart got it. There's nothing that pissed me off more than that when Black Bart actually had the Mid-Atlantic title before Ronnie Garvin got it and retired it. Jesus. It was like Black Bart with the national title. I hated that too.
We were talking Hall of Fames earlier. The Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame in Amsterdam announced its 2012 class. Among those going in, Jimmy Snuka, Jim Cornette, Dominic DiNucci, Wendy Richter, and the Wild Samoans. This will be the 11th class in Amsterdam. That's one place I got to get before I die.
Now, see, one place I got to get before I die is Dutch Amsterdam. I know that for sure. But
yeah.
But you know, it's like going to Kennesaw. If I was able, ever to do that run, I would probably knock them all out. I'd probably go to Canton first, Cooperstown, Kennesaw, Amsterdam, and then might as well go over to see the Hockey Hall of Fame in Ontario too.
I have
them all out in one shot.
Yeah, I have decided, and before my dad died, actually, it was going to be three generations of the Tates. We were
finally had a chance to go to the Spy Museum. Located right outside Chinatown, right by pretty much from across from the Smithsonian Photography Center. It is awesome. And I know there's probably a lot of people listening that grew up. I mean, they were going through the World War II phase and then the Westerns phase and then into the spy phase of their lives. It is incredible. It is absolutely incredible. If you looked at it from the outside, it's nothing like you'd believe when you went into the thing. You can select a mission. You can try to defuse a bomb and go on that tour. It's incredible. They take it all the way back from when Jesus told Moses to spy on Canaan and to see what their fields were like and everything, to the Frenchman who cracked the Rosetta Stone, and they have a reproduction of the Rosetta Stone there with the three languages on it, all the way through down into cyber terrorism. And they have so much interactive stuff and cool stuff along the way that if you were ever into that stuff, and one whole, place where they're showing old movies or old TV shows, and it's like Get Smart's there and all these G-Men stuff is there. They have 007 talc and deodorant and things from over the years of all of these different groups and different spies and TV shows and movies, and it is absolutely incredible, including all the people that, famous spies like Julia Child and Mo Berg and things like that. Just an absolutely incredible exhibit.
Sounds cool. Sounds awesome.
Well, $18. That's it, too. $18.
Really?
My next mission is the Newseum, which I've been dying to get to, too. I want to see the Smithsonian Pop Culture center that they have. This is where Ric Flair's robe is. I forget the exact name of it, but it's kind of like the modern culture Smithsonian exhibit. And then the Newseum, which is all about, broadcasting and news and journalism and all that sort of stuff, which is not far from there, too, which I'm dying to go see that one. And I'm not sure what the rates are for there, but, yeah, only $18 for the Spy Museum, and it was well worth it.
Very good. All right, so we've got, let's see. Oh, man, I just hit the wrong button. All right.
it's like running Snippy. Don't press the big red button.
Let me ask you something. I'm sitting here, and I'm looking at the lineup for TNA Final Resolution. And a 30-minute Iron Man match?
That's stupid, I know.
What's the catch? What? If you go 30 minutes now, you're an Iron Man?
Well,
really?
I guess the one thing they can say is maybe like they'll try to approach like this is an AJ Styles, signature match. He's had the great ones with Samoa Joe and Christopher Daniels and things. I don't know. It's a gimmick to have a gimmick on a card. Doesn't make any sense. I mean, why don't I just call it one fall 30 minute time limit?
What, you mean handcuffable content for this week anyway? I don't know how much of an old movie buff you are, but I am huge into old movies. I love sitting around. If I can have Turner Classic Movies on 24/7, I would. But there is a movie coming on, and Christmas movies, yeah, they're a little sappy, but, hey, I got to admit it. You got kids in the house, it gets a little sappy around Christmas. So there's a movie coming on, I believe it's next Tuesday night. Don't know if you've ever seen it. It's a movie that I know a lot of people, anytime I talk about it, they look at me like I got three heads. But it's The Lemon Drop Kid with Bob Hope. This is one of the absolutely funniest Christmas movies ever made. I first saw it in the 1980s. You got to go out of your way to see this. It was It was kind of like one of those, you know, I don't know if you know the story about It's a Wonderful Life, but it fell into the public domain, which is why it ended up on every damn channel 24/7 back in the 80s. And you know, then they had to correct, our DVD player still has a videotape player. So my mom ends up finding this old cassette tape that she had recorded the Lemon Drop Kid onto. And she, for some reason, it ended up, she pulled it out of storage last year. She's like, oh, look what I found. You love this movie, right? I was like, yeah. So she pulled it out, and it was like hard to watch. I mean, it was, you know, you could tell the tape had been sitting around for 30 years. But it still played well enough. But, you know, to anybody out there listening, if you like comedy, you like a little bit of Christmas movie, a little bit of classic, go look for the Lemon Drop Kid. I think it's Tuesday night on Turner Classic Movies. Funny stuff. Funny
now,
stuff.
Is it actually that one? They're not breaking out the old 30s one, are they? It's like, that's the other thing, watching Scrooge at Christmas time. It's like, all right, is this Albert Finney's? All right, which one is this?
Yeah, well, this came out in 1951. It's the only version of it. And, you know, when you talk about remakes of Christmas movies, I think the worst thing ever was Miracle on 34th Street being remade. You know, you're never going to get any better than the original. I think they did one like in 68 or something with Mr. Fritch. And then, if I'm not mistaken, they did yet another one, just within the last 10 years or so, I think.
They did one when, I'm trying to think, they've been like 15 or 20 now, and Elizabeth Perkins, I think, was the mom, and they did probably as good of a job as you could do in a remake, but the thing is, the remake is still so good and so timeless, because all you got to do is just put your brain to, you know, a toy or something else that would be with today, and it's still pretty perfect. I mean, that's a pretty, it's like Christmas Story. Don't remake it. You can't do it. You can't remake that movie. That one is truly timeless.
You know, here's something for you. I was 15 when A Christmas Story came out. 43 now, I've still not seen that movie.
How did you miss it being down there? Well, I know there's national TBS, too, but how the hell did you miss it every single year?
She's actually got the DVR set to record her Christmas Story this year so that I will actually get to see it finally. So I don't know. I just, you know, I love old TV and old movies, but at the same time, I don't sit around and just watch TV. So it's just kind of one of those things where it's like, you know, unless I've got time to set aside and it happens to be on, I'm just not going to be watching it. So, you know, she's basically using technology to nail me down and get it to where I can see this thing at some point. So I don't know. You know, you say it's a classic. Everybody else talks about it being a classic. I don't know.
Just see it once. That's the whole thing, is when it's replayed 24/7. You know, you like anything else, you want to blow your brains out. But seeing it once, I mean, if nothing else, for, you know, the Chinese Christmas dinner, just that right there alone is great.
National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, though, still the funniest movie, funniest Christmas movie.
Hey, Clark, Shitter's Full. I love that movie. It's a bad movie. It's a bad movie, but God, is it a great bad movie.
Oh, no. Bad movie? Bad Santa. You seen Bad Santa?
See, I love Bad Santa.
Talk about warped. God, what a movie.
I
don't think I've laughed so hard watching something Christmas related.
Bernie Mac eating the orange. You know, he's just, I think John Ritter saw, and John Ritter trying to explain the sounds of sex that Billy Bob Thornton was having in a illegal in some areas of people that are listening to this broadcast place on a woman in a stall. It's a sick movie, but it's one of those sick movies that at least doesn't end sick. You know, because there's a lot of them like that. It was like, you know, with Henry, Portrait of a Serial. There are movies that you watch it, and it's like at the end of it, you just still feel dirty and need a shower, 8mm like that. This one, at least, it's, you know, there's good that happens at the end, even though there's a bunch of characters that you don't like. And I love movies like that. It's like Bad Lieutenant or Reservoir Dogs or movies like, when they're all great shades of gray and you really don't like any of these guys, that's what makes it more real. Because, you know, for every great It's a Wonderful Life type movie, you need a movie like Bad Santa, too.
Absolutely.
And that, you know, that relationship in Batana, I could see far more than Donna Reed ever marrying a schlub like Jimmy Stewart in that movie.
Oh, I just put myself in Jimmy Stewart's shoes and just pretend I'm him.
At least 10 points. And you know what? You exposed what everybody's been telling them. You need a running game, gentlemen. And they wouldn't listen until after Atlanta beat them. And they're trying now to build up their running game, which they should have been doing in training camp. You can't depend on one person. You know, we don't have Barry Sanders anymore to kick around, so we had, you know, somebody had to do something. And you know what? I didn't want to lose to Atlanta. I really didn't. That was kind of like scraping the bottom of the barrel. But you know what? It showed them they need work.
Well, we definitely appreciate it.
You know what? You're welcome. I mean, hey, you know what?
We've had to scratch and claw for every win this year. So to get one on the road against a team like Detroit was just key.
You know what? Yeah, you know, Detroit might make it to the playoffs. They might have a berth in the playoffs. It's like looking at a team that last year they won. You know, they won four straight, and they, you know, they did good. This year, you see a good team becoming, you can see them becoming a mediocre good team. Next year, with a running game, everything set, they should be a halfway good, decent team. And hopefully they'll become like a Detroit Red Wings of football or something. I don't know.
I think you're going to get that lucky. If you can get a year like 84 Tigers, I think you'll be good enough with that. But, yeah, it's not giving up. They got to wake up. And Seattle has got this problem with Tom Cable going up there and having problems with Aaron Curry. Detroit's biggest thing is, I'm not saying their biggest thing, the biggest thing is a running game, which I think for that, as long as you find somebody named Barry Sanders, there needs to be a running back named Barry out there that they can scoop up and try to do something with.
No, it was,
because that
it
seems
was
to be
Billy
their best Sanders. Luck.
It was Billy Sanders. Anything that
starts
with a B.
Was Billy Sanders, now wasn't it? All right, you just need a running back whose name begins with B then.
Right. I'm a firm believer in that. Oh, man.
Detroit, it's all about the BS up there. Barry Sanders.
You know what? And that's the sad part about it is without them, the teams were basically nothing. Nobody knew about Detroit unless they had a good running back, and that's the bad stat. That's the bad part about it, and very sad too. When they were what, 5-6 years apart from each other, and when Detroit never had a running game. It was like 12 years before they actually got better.
You know, Peyton's good, but really, is it that bad without him? It's insane.
You know, when I saw that they were still old, I was like, you mean, come on. I mean, is he that much of a leader that when he goes down, everybody shuts down? It seemed like even the coach shut down. I was like, man. Yeah, you know, I couldn't believe it. Hey, guys. You know, I got a couple of questions for y'all. Okay, the other night, I haven't seen them. This is the first time I actually looked at them. But I was watching a Bobby Heenan story from WWE. And I, you know, is it me or do they slant shit in their way?
Oh, the worst.
Wrestling history in their own favor.
Well, do you have the Bret Hart DVD? Have you ever seen that?
Which one?
The Bret Hart one?
No, I have Netflix to have Bret Hart on there.
Stuff, and they show the one interview where he goes from being like Pretty Boy Bobby Heenan to Bobby the Brain Heenan, and he's like, you know, when you see Bockwinkle, you're going to see Stevens and Heenan. When you see Ray Stevens, you're going to see Bockwinkle and Heenan, and vice versa and all this stuff. That's like the only interview they play. And then all of a sudden, they even skip over him even coming into the WWF and managing like Adrian Adonis and the Missing Link and guys like that. All of a sudden, it's like 86, he's with Bundy and the Heenan family. Like, what's going on?
You know what? I think
Dick the Bruiser, Athlos, I don't know who owns that. A lot of it pops up on YouTube, or a lot of random stuff from Chicago and Indianapolis, and WWA stuff will pop up on YouTube with Heenan in it. You're telling me you couldn't throw a couple bucks out there? It can't be that much to get that footage to link it in with the AWA stuff, because, like you're saying, you could do like 10 DVDs, and there's people like us that would buy them if you're giving us all of it. Even if you're going to spit it in your way, if you're going to give me those old clips, I'll pay for it. I have no problem paying for it. So they take money out of their own pocket.
Right. You know what? I hope they never do a Gorgeous George documentary. I hope they never do. Because if they do, they'll kill it. They'll kill what Gorgeous George really was. I hope they never touch him. I hope his family never give him the right to do it. Because, you know, it just looks so bad.
But then,
it looks
so bad. I don't think it's going to matter, because I think they have Capoeira's book rights. I honestly, God, I think they have the movie rights to that book. If that's the case, it doesn't matter. They're going to do it anyway, and I can see them down the line doing it anyway. I really can. Next time they go to L.A. and they do a Hollywood WrestleMania, I can absolutely see them around that time doing some fool stuff like that.
You know, and it'll kill Gorgeous George's legacy. Because, I mean, you already don't hear about him anyway anymore. And for them to bring, they kind of slant, oh, you know what, really? And they don't even really, how do they do it? You know, most people, when they slant stuff, they kind of push their little stuff in. It's like with them, they drive a truck right through it. And I'm like, oh. And I was just looking at it. The only reason, like I say, the only reason why I seen it and I kept watching it and I loved it is because Bobby Heenan was on it, because he can do it. But, you know, I just said, no more. I looked at all the ones I seen on Netflix and I said, you know, it doesn't really matter if I watch this crap or not. I can't do it anymore. It's like with TNA. As much as the Impact Wrestling, as much as I want to watch it, you know, it's like the Pretty Girls of Honor or something. They have a third federation before they get the hang of it. That the wrestling now sucks. And, I don't know. I haven't watched Impact Wrestling in almost a month. I haven't watched WWE in about a year, you know, and the only thing I have is YouTube and the old wrestling, and that's pretty sad. And I'm starting to talk like Les Thatcher, which is probably bad for my health.
And it's truth, you know, that there it's going to be. The Observer just came out with the ballots for the end of the year awards for everybody who's a Observer subscriber. Even if you just get a hold of the ballot, you send an email in to Dave, he's going to count it for the awards. If it's CM Punk, I would assume, and I hate to say this, CM Punk's going to win it. Why? For he was not going to win the belt, or didn't win the belt, but he was one of those things where it could be looked at as, if he doesn't win the belt this time, fans could turn on his career and go, he's always going to be, you know, a second-tier guy. They had to be very delicate and careful about it. It was extraordinary. Tetsuya Naito, a couple weeks ago, who won the G1, a young guy. You know, he, not saying Tanahashi carried him, Naito carried his own weight. But Tanahashi, I mean, it was an epic battle. Him and an old pro, Yuji Nagata, at the beginning of the year. He just had another defense against Nagata that I'm sure was good, too. But all three of those matches, if you watch them in order, you wonder how the next one could possibly be better. And that's the thing with Hiroshi Tanahashi, is the world's wrestler of the year this year. I don't think bar none. Mochizuki, somebody might say in Dragon Gate. There's a couple people in Mexico that might say somebody different. Punk or Orton here, I guess. that's your best options. But realistically, that dude is pro wrestling and has pro wrestling matches and does it in an entertaining way where he crosses over. And again,
I hate to say her name in a WWE because what I've seen of her looks so bad. But did she get released yet?
No, as far as I know, she's still under contract.
You can't. There would be no. Look, even if they wanted to, you cannot release a pregnant woman. There, you just can't do it.
Oh, she's pregnant?
Yeah. And even as an independent contractor, all that sort of stuff, it would be real bad looking if they ever cut her. Yeah. Basically, that's how they wrote her out. She comes up the next week, cuts a promo, says, "You know what? I'm pregnant." The Bellas make fun of her. Who would have sex with you? All that sort of stuff. Says, "You know what? After I, have this child, I'm going to come back and I'm going to remember what you said." So they got that built up for later, and at least they threw that out there. Now, they could always drop that and nobody would know, would probably be the wiser or care again. But frankly, if you're going to have women on the roster, her coming back, would be, that's the only thing you can do.
And now she has a wrestling ring on her
finger. My thing is, with her, that stalking thing, I don't know how it is, how many feet from the ring, from the ramp to the ring. I watched that, and I just turned to TV because I've seen it. Why would you stay? You know what that's like? You beat up somebody, and they say, "Well, stay here. I'm going to get my big brother." Do you really stand there waiting for this guy's big brother to get there? No, you go home. You go home, you eat, you sleep, and you go to school the next day. I just don't understand. Last time I actually watched it, and it wasn't long. They said Awesome Kong was going to be on, and I said, "Okay, I got to watch. She's the greatest woman's wrestler I've ever seen." And it didn't last more than 2 minutes, and I just can't watch that crap. To me, it looked like crap. It really looked like crap. And
we ended up talking about Christmas movies. So,
let me ask Mike this. You remember, Quentin Rampage Jackson, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now, I have some old clips of him. You remember an organization called Gladiator Challenge, Mixed Martial Arts?
Yes, I do.
That's the King of the Ring?
Yeah.
Well, Quentin Rampage Jackson started in that organization. And when he first came out, he said, yes, he would want to go to the WWE. And he has some tremendous fights in Gladiator Challenge. He would pick people up, spin them around, and just throw them down the ground. This is before he damn near killed that guy in Pride. I still have that clip to this day.
Ricardo Arona's powerbomb ride?
Yeah, I was like, I tell people, that's the sweetest thing I've ever seen. I thought the guy was dead for about.
Was spinning around. I mean, nobody could tell a story like Rampage Jackson, and part stick, part legit, but a very, very unique guy. But yeah, I mean, he is pro wrestling. My God. When Pride signed him after Game Cage, when he first signed with Pride, they brought him in as a pseudo Mike Tyson, a homeless guy who lived in a bus and was friends and talked to pigeons. That's how they brought him into Pride.
I remember one of the skits where Alex is him anymore. If you have a 24-inch bicep, who cares if you just stand there? People would cheer because you have a 24-inch bicep.
It's like the women's division. You talk about the women's division. Why do people love Ronda Rousey with her gimmick and everything? Know why everybody loves Ronda Rousey? Aesthetics and athletics. You want to hook up with this woman, yet at the same time, I mean, you're amazed by her athletic prowess. That's what you wanted. I mean, women wrestling in WWE would be no different.
I can turn it and watch WCW. I mean, you have some bad matches, but you also have the good matches that evens everything out. And quite frankly, it's just not working. and it's really sad that nobody has tried to get a lot of these wrestlers. Bob Snap, he was a wrestler owner in Japan. why couldn't he come in here, as big as he was in Japan, he could have came over here and ruled WWE or TNA for the longest, because this guy was, you know, he was athletic to a point. He wasn't very fast. He's a muscular, but he knows how to fight. He knows how to get on the ground, scramble a little bit, better than some of these ass clowns in WWE now. I'm like, both of y'all have a nice holiday.
Yeah, you too, man. Have a good Christmas. I tell you, John's one of my favorite callers. I'm sorry. He gets on a roll. He's hilarious. So anyway.
They're getting me on a roll. Which, by the way, again, with Bob Sapp, too. They tried with Bob Sapp. Bob Sapp's one of those, for people who don't know him, was a monster. Was in WCW's power plant. A huge, big, steroided-up guy. The University of Washington football player. Every guy that, when he went into the draft, everybody said, you know, he looks like a first-rounder, but he's never going to pass the test. I think the Chicago Bears ended up being so impressed by looks. Boy, it sounds like wrestling. Ended up being so impressed by looks that they took him, and then obviously didn't last very long there, and went into fighting. He was a scary dude. He's one of those guys that his size, he was such a – look, he picked up Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira, arguably one of the greatest – or I'm sorry, not arguably. Is one of the greatest heavyweight MMA guys of all time. Picked him up, powerbomb on top of the head. Oh, looked like he could kill him in one of his very – in Japan, which is why he didn't have to train so hard. Look, I'm not even going to kid you here. He had a dildo marketed after him. Now, I don't know if it's original size or anything like that, but that's how the branding of Bob Sapp worked in Japan. It's like when you go into the Far East and there's David Beckham women's hair salons. Like, it doesn't make any sense. No, it doesn't matter. That's how much they love Bob Sapp over there with commercials and everything else. He was such a freak that this wasn't even like Stan Hansen wanting to stay in Japan and dropping the AWA title. I mean, Bob Sapp is on some incredibly freaky other level over there where he didn't want to take the pay cut coming over here unless it was to make big-time movies.
Wow.
I mean, absolutely, it's amazing. Just if Google Bob Sapp and put in, you know, merchandise and things like that, and he's such, and obviously, if you saw him in The Longest Yard or a lot of other movies, he's a very, very, I mean, he's a cartoon character come to life. So you can imagine all the wacky stuff from over there with the big, incredible laugh, which, again, a walking gimmick for pro wrestling that just didn't happen to be in pro wrestling.
All right. You know, I think that's going to do it here for us this week. A lot of awesome conversations, just jumping from topic to topic. Hopefully Les will be back with us next week. Not sure what happened to him. Probably got hung up at the gym. Of course, he does train folks and does a little personal training also. If you want to catch up with Les or find out what's going on with him or how he can help you, it's Les@EPWT.com or EPWT.com, the website. Mike, what do you got going on?
The Evan Mike Big Audio Nightmare, which just went up on did it on Sunday, went up late Sunday night for members of WrestlingObserver.com. If you're not a member, become a member. Only $10.99 a month. More than well worth it. It really, really is, with the archives of shows. I mean, the audio shows alone, the Bruno Sammartino, three of those shows alone, are worth a year's subscription, much less one at $10.99. But, yeah, really happy with the show this week. Adam and I did a little tribute to Bison Smith on there, as well as some hockey talk about the Washington Capitals and a lot of talk about fandom and different things like that, but that was a really, really good show this week, as well as Wrestling Observer Live every Sunday from 6 to 8. On go to sportsbyline.com to listen, KHSP.com from Las Vegas, one of our affiliates. We got one in Memphis, over-the-air affiliate, Sports Radio 560, Sports 56 in Memphis. So I think they do, I don't know if they do Ole Miss or Arkansas. I had to double-check on that, some of the different sports that are on there. But we're also now on there. I think you can also stream from there. Sirius Channel 98. Oh, great. I can't remember the Sirius Channel. Never usually matters because football always blocks us off anyway. But I think it's Sirius Channel 94 or 92. I don't know what it is. XM Channel 208. but I'd rather have you listen online anyway. So if nothing else, there's the WrestlingObserver.com. Say you listen through too.
Take it wherever it goes, and we'll see. That's going to be it for us this week. We will be here again next time. Last words, Mike?
Good night, Les, wherever you are.
We thank you for listening to the Tribecast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for the